Welcome to SLC Misfit Podcast. I am your host for the evening, afternoon, morning, whenever it is you're listening to it. My name is Victory Red, and this is my first episode. So I'm pretty excited. I actually have been talking for about half an hour and realized I wasn't even recording, so that was super awesome. Oh boy. I don't know what to tell you. I should probably also introduce my co-host. This is Porkchop. He's my 12-pound Shih Tzu who is sitting in my lap and refuses to move. You're not going to hear much from him because he's asleep. However, when he dreams, he sometimes barks. So you might hear him. And usually when he does that, it scares the shit out of me. So just to warn you, there might be a little screaming and screeching in this podcast. Hopefully he'll just stay asleep, but I have no idea what's going to actually happen. So we will find out. All right. So this first episode is going to be just mainly a kind of introduction, who I am, what you can expect from this going forward. I will answer a couple of questions that were presented to me, and then we'll just kind of take it from there and have some fun with it. The reason I'm doing this is because I live in the Salt Lake City area. I was raised Mormon. I grew up here, but then I spent most of my adult life on the East Coast. I'm no longer Mormon. I very much officially had my name removed from church records, which is kind of like a way of excommunicating myself, I guess. I'm trying to put this in like terms that aren't so Mormon lingo based for any other listeners who may be interested, which basically consists of me going into a member of the clergy and saying, hey, I don't want to do this anymore, so let's pretend like I never got baptized or whatever. And they're like, okay. And then they sign some paper, and then you get a big official letter from like the leadership, like top leadership of the church, that says, hey, guess what? You're not part of our church anymore. If you want to become part again, you have to get rebaptized, whatever. I could probably tell you what it says. I have the letter. I saved it. So something I have to be very, very clear about is I am an ex-Mormon, but I don't consider myself to be anti-Mormon. I don't like being anti-people or anti-human. That's not who I am. Now, there are obviously some very serious issues that I have with the church as an organization, and some of its members can be giant dickheads. That's true of any organization and any group of people, right? So this podcast, when I first kind of was coming up with the idea, I presented it to another organization who kind of helps with like editing and distributing and things, and they in fact never really got back to me, but I heard through the grapevine that they were concerned because they thought I was anti-Mormon. That really fucking frustrates me, because the assumption that just because I'm no longer part of that church means I hate everybody involved with it, it's pretty narrow-minded thinking. And unfortunately, it's something that a lot of people in this area just assume. So, all of that said, yes, I've got issues with the Mormon church, and I will be talking about some of those issues throughout this podcast. However, religion, for the most part, is kind of a personal thing. Like, I don't give a shit. As long as it doesn't affect me or the laws governing my country or state, do whatever the fuck you want to do. Long before I converted to paganism, I don't know, do you convert to paganism? But kind of decided I was pagan, I guess. I sort of had this attitude of, you know, harm none, do what you will kind of thing. And then now it's like actually part of my spiritual belief set, but it's always been there for me. I don't care. I don't care. If you're Mormon, cool. Just don't be an asshole. Catholic, same deal. Jewish, yep, gotcha. Whatever. Whatever you want to do is fine until it starts affecting me. And then I'm not so fine with it. For those of you who have a background in Mormonism, you will already understand that there are some weird things that happen when you're raised in that particular environment. For those of you who don't have that background, I'm just going to say it's really conservative. And it's very patriarchal. So there's a lot of like weird fucked up guilt things that can happen sometimes about being a woman and feeling like you have power and your sexuality and all of these things. And it's something that has affected my life. Because I'm no longer Mormon, because I'm very officially ex-Mormon, I don't really fit in this culture or society that I'm now living in. Hence the name of the podcast. I, in so many ways, don't fit into a clear category, I guess. I'm a single mom. I'm a divorced single mom. My ex-husband lives in New England still, so thousands and thousands of miles away from each other. My daughter spends summers with her dad, and I think that's awesome. My ex and I are still friends. Like, it's not super strained or weird or anything, which is super nice. But again, that puts me in kind of this weird category. Single moms. Everybody loves a single dad. Oh my God. Anytime you see stories about single dads on social media, people are always like, oh my God, what a great guy, la la la. But single moms, there's kind of a negative picture of who we are and what we're doing. There's this idea that we were irresponsible and that's why we're single parents or something. And I hate that. Look, I don't care, mother, father, whatever. Single parenting is really hard. But it's also really awesome. I have a very close relationship with my kiddo, and I think part of that is because it's just me and her. So there's definitely a silver lining there. Other things that make me kind of a misfit. I'm a burlesque dancer. That's not normal for Utah or Salt Lake City. That's something that people, again, have preconceived notions about. I'm a belly dancer. Again, not super traditional or common, although there is a pretty thriving belly dance community here in Salt Lake and in the greater Utah area, which is awesome. But again, people have some misconceptions about what that means. I'm a geek. Huge, huge fucking nerd. I love cosplay. Sometimes I model. Oh, yeah, I guess that's something else you should probably know about me if you don't already know me. I'm chubby. I'm a big fat girl. And particularly in the Salt Lake area, which is a very image conscious place, I don't fit in. Sometimes, you know, literally like, oh, this seat is way too small for my huge ass. What am I gonna do? So being a plus size model in this modeling environment, again, another way I don't fit in. I am also highly sensitive, and I need to explain what that is because it's probably going to come up over and over and over again. High sensitivity is a personality trait. I don't even want to call it a personality disorder, although I've heard people refer to it that way before. Basically, it means kind of what it sounds like. I am really, really, really fucking sensitive. I'm sensitive to the emotions of people around me. I'm sensitive in the sense that I take things very personally, that I'm easily affected, and emotional. Again, a word that has a negative ring to it. This does not mean that I'm stupid, and it does not mean that I'm hysterical. What it means is, along with about 20% of the population, is that I feel things more deeply. And I can't shut that off. It just is. It's like being this like exposed nerve where everything just hits really fucking hard all the time. I've learned ways to cope with it, but sometimes it's like speaking a different language, and I have to filter things that other people say through this translator to be able to understand what they meant. There, in my view, there's three kinds of people. There are normally sensitive people, which is the bulk. I mean, that's most people. There's highly sensitive people like me, and of course I can understand them because that's how I am wired. And then there's nominally sensitive people or minimally sensitive people. And I don't fucking understand them at all. Some of my worst experiences in life with relationships and friendships are with minimally sensitive people. they're the ones who are like, oh, well, I just, you know, nothing ever bothers me. And I just don't really feel things. And they can sometimes come across as mean. The frustrating part is that the people that I've met who carry that particular trait view themselves as being better than people who are highly sensitive. They've always treated me like I'm stupid. And I'm not stupid. I'm actually extremely intelligent. So I've had some really horrible experiences within the last year with a couple of people in particular who are minimally sensitive, who also happen to be part of the burlesque community here to a degree, and bullied me so bad that I almost quit. So even in my burlesque community, I feel like a misfit. In my modeling community, I feel like a misfit. And I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. It just means that sometimes it's hard to feel like you belong because people can't always relate to what you're experiencing. And I'm one of those people that really craves that connection. I need people to understand. I want to be understood. Don't most of us? Here's another fun way in which I'm something of a misfit. I'm bisexual. And let me put a little asterisk here and tell you what bisexual means to me. I guess it would mean more like pansexual. But there's a reason I call myself bisexual, and we'll get into that a little bit later. Because for me, it's super important. Bi for me just means more than one. So again, defining my sexual orientation probably fits more with the idea of pansexuality, but I have always defined bisexuality the way pansexuality is defined. So you're going to hear me use those interchangeably. That's for me. Okay. I understand that everybody has their own definition and that's totally fine. This is mine. You're not straight enough for the straight people, and you're not gay enough for a lot of gay people. Now, I'm very fortunate because the LGBTQ+ community in the Salt Lake area has been awesome to me. But I understand that there are other people who don't necessarily feel like they are accepted by their local LGBTQ+ communities, and that sucks. So we will talk about that. And I will go off on some soapbox madness periodically about the lack of bisexual representation in the media because it drives me fucking crazy. And we're going to talk a lot about representation because that's another one of my big, big things. So here I am, living in Salt Lake City, Utah. I'm a single mom, belly dancer, burlesque dancer, cosplay artist. Sometimes I model, although not so much lately. I have body image issues because I'm a chubster. Oh, I'm an ex-Mormon, and I am also right now serving as Ms. Gay Utah for the Golden... The Royal Court of the Golden Spike Empire. Woo! It's a mouthful. Yeah, that's what she said. Okay, so how I got involved in that, because I'm not a pageant person at all. If you've met me, no, you'd be like, this does not make sense. You? Pageants? No, I don't see it. Yeah, for good reason. Because I'm just this nerdy, chubby girl. Back in January, I decided to enter the Ms. Gay Utah pageant. And I was scared shitless because I've never done a pageant before. I don't know anything about them. I don't know what anybody's looking for in contests like that. I, myself, don't really like contests. I'm not competitive. I just want everybody to feel loved and fulfilled and be happy. So competitions are not my thing in any sense. And the competitions that I've been part of in the past were just really bad experiences, except for this pageant. It was actually a really, really fucking awesome experience. So I go into it thinking this is a good way to push myself, to get out of my comfort zone. I mean, yeah, okay, I'm a belly dancer, burlesque dancer. I'm sometimes an actress, model, whatever. I've been performing since I was very, very young. I've been a dancer since I was like 4. So I feel pretty comfortable on stage. But again, this whole pageant thing was new to me. I just really wanted to push myself to do something a little different. I wanted to get more involved in my local LGBTQ plus community. And I wanted to give my daughter the experience of seeing me do something that scared me. Because let's be honest, as parents, we ask our kids to do a lot of stuff that scares them. Go take this quiz you don't feel prepared for. Go audition for this thing that makes you nervous. Go try to make friends in a school where a lot of the kids are little shit gibbons. Like, I'm constantly asking my daughter to be brave. So I needed to show her that I was willing to do the same myself. So I entered and I prepared my talent portion, and I had to like borrow evening gowns from a friend because I don't have that kind of stuff. And I participated and everybody was so nice, like backstage during that thing. Oh my God, we just had so much fun and everybody was super positive and supportive of each other. And it was awesome. Just all around really welcoming, good experience. And then I won somehow, so that really surprised me because I was not expecting that. So suddenly I was just thrown into this kind of role where I felt pretty out of my depth, but it has been amazing. And I realized the other day that my time serving as Ms. Gay Utah, time serving, ooh, that makes it sound like prison. That's not how it feels at all. My reign, that sounds really hoity-toity, and that's not me either, so I don't even know what to call it. My experience, there we go, as Ms. Gay Utah is going to be coming to an end here in a few months, and I will be stepping down, and I actually feel kind of sad about that. But there are still going to be ways for me to, you know, do some good things in the community, and I very much look forward to that. So, I'm gonna get all emotional here in a minute. What's the point of this? I don't know. Where was I going with it? Somebody keep me on track. I was very surprised and very honored to accept that title. And being part of the court community has been a really good experience for me, and it has done a lot for my confidence, and I just love them. I love them. I love you guys if you ever listen to this. I didn't think I could do it, but I'm grateful that I tried, and I've made so many good friends, and everyone has accepted me with open arms, and they've been so accepting of my daughter as well. And she really, really looks up to a lot of the court members. So it's been a good experience all the way around and so much fun. And it has given me the opportunity to do more fundraisers and charity work, which is something that I absolutely love and I'm very passionate about. So, bisexual. Yeah, I don't really fit in. You know what I mean? Like I said before, not straight enough for straight people, not gay enough for some gay people, and you're just left in this, like, weird, like, you know? But my friends here have been very, very supportive. So let me tell you a little bit about my experiences coming to terms with my bisexuality and being part of the Mormon church. Again, I have to just stress that I'm an ex-Mormon. I don't consider myself anti-Mormon. And while I don't love a lot of what the church does, obviously, or I'd still, I guess, be a member of it, I don't want to be mean to people, and I don't want to tell them that they're doing something wrong, because I don't think I have the corner market on the right way to approach spirituality or anything else. Like, everybody needs to do what's best for them. So, you know, growing up Mormon, my family was more on the liberal end, I guess, of Mormonism. But, you know, you're still going through your, you know, chastity lessons or whatever, and there's expectations that you're given about, you know, dressing modestly and your behavior and obedience. And we'll talk about those worthiness interviews because I have very strong feelings about those. And whatever, I kind of just went along with it. But there were things about it that I wasn't super into, and I kind of just wrote those off. From a young age, I was pretty much a la carting my religious experience. And that worked for me for a really long time until it didn't. And that's when I left. For me, it got to the point where I just couldn't reconcile what I saw happening with my own personal beliefs. And that was why I left the church. Specifically, what it probably says on my paperwork and what I told the bishop. Oh, my dog's talking. Do you hear him? He's so cute. That's not what I told my bishop. What I told my bishop was that I needed to have my name removed from the records of the church because of the church's view on marriage equality. This happened all about the time of Prop 8 in California, and the church was very much telling their members how to vote, and that was fucking stupid. I just was not about that at all. The other thing that I said was, hey, I think it's pretty fucked up. Well, I probably didn't say fucked up because I actually try to be somewhat respectful around people that I know don't like swearing. So I said, I think it's really confusing and irritating and damaging, in fact, that the church will say, hey, you've got this heavenly mother, but don't pray to her, don't learn about her, don't whatever. Like, what is that? Come on. Come on. That is stupid. I'm sorry. So stupid. So, I don't know. I happened to have a pretty cool bishop at the time, and he was just like, yeah, that all makes sense. And he signed my thing, and my experience leaving the church was super easy. And actually, I guess in a weird way, kind of positive. The neighborhood that I was living in, nobody treated me any different. Nobody gave a shit. Like, I had grown up there, and people knew who I was. Nobody cared. So for me, it was easy. I know for a lot of other people, it's not. And I am so sorry for that. I wish everybody could have as easy an experience as I did leaving the Mormon church. Okay. So those are some of my views. Other things you should know about me is, you know, that I am a feminist. I consider myself to be a feminist. I do not hate men. I just think that we live in a very toxic, masculine, patriarchal society, and I think it hurts both men and women. It hurts everybody. So, yeah, we need to not have that anymore. How I found out I was bisexual. I guess I first realized it when I was, I want to say 13 or 14, and I was at a church camp, and this particular, well, I wasn't, I don't think it was like run by the church, but it was all of my church buddies that went to it. It's called Oak Crest. If any of you went there, you'll know what I'm talking about. It still had a very kind of religious-y feel to it. But I discovered while there one year that I was really crushing hard on one of the camp counselors. And her name, okay, so all the counselors picked, like, random names that they would go, like, stage names, I guess, almost, camp names that they would go by for that whole week, and then, like, at the last day or something, there'd be this big reveal, like, my real name is Carol, or whatever the case may be. So I start to have, you know, romantic sexual feelings for this camp counselor whose camp name, I shit you not, was Trigger. Now, she named herself after one of those, like, vultures from Disney Robin Hood, the animated one with the fox. Talk about confusing feelings. That fox was hot. I don't care what anybody says. So at first, I tried to just talk myself out of what I was feeling. Like, oh no, I just think Trigger's really cool. She's just super cool. And I just want to be like her. And I went through this whole kind of denial thing. And I was terrified because, of course, being raised in the religious setting that I was raised in, that was not okay to have those feelings. It was like something you were supposed to get rid of, right? So, oh, I had such a crush on her, though. Oh, my God. I know she had really kind of shortish, curly hair and these really, really pretty brown eyes. And I've always been a sucker for brown eyes. Oh, my God. Anyway, I set those feelings aside for a really, really long time. And it wasn't until probably my mission that they started to stir up again a little bit. I never really had crushes on my companions. They were never super my type, I guess. I mean, there were a couple of them that I was kind of into, but it was never to the point where I was distracted or whatever. After my mission was over, and oh, will I tell you mission stories here and there, I started to accept my bisexuality a little bit more, but I never could say it. I never could say I'm bisexual. I couldn't say it out loud. I couldn't say it to myself. There was just this, I don't know. In a way I sort of felt about it like, again, like something that needed to be fixed. Like, okay, you know, I have really terrible vision and it's something that I fix. I have a really bad knee. That's something that just needs to be fixed. It's something wrong with me and we fix it. And that's how I viewed my sexuality for a really long time. And it wasn't until I'd been married for a couple of years that I was able to talk to my husband about it a little bit. But even then, I don't remember ever saying the word bisexual. I just remember talking like, yeah, she's hot, or I'm kind of into her, or, you know, things like that. And it wasn't until my marriage was sort of dissolving that I started to own that part of myself a little bit more and accept that part of myself. But I was still pretty quiet about it, and I didn't act on it much at all. In fact, I had convinced myself for a really long time that, okay, yeah, I really love sex, and so there are some women that I'm sexually attracted to, but I could never be in a relationship with a woman or someone who identified as a woman. I just probably could never do that. I get along better with guys, blah, 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 blah. That changed for me a few years ago, and I finally came out to my parents. I want to say it was 2016. So not that long ago, you guys. And I was terrified to tell them. I was like 38 years old and I was scared to tell my parents. It's hard. It's hard to say I'm different. It's hard to not know how someone is going to look at you after you express something to them about who you really are. It was one of the hardest things that I've ever done. And my parents handled it, you know, pretty well. There was no like, oh, you're disowning you. Like, that was not my experience at all. My mom just didn't seem like she was at all surprised, which I know happens a lot with, you know, when kids come out to their parents are like, oh yeah, we already knew that. Like, glad you caught up finally or whatever. But, my dad had a harder time with it. He said, you know, I have no problem with this with other people, but honestly, with my own child, I'm struggling with this a little bit. And it didn't really hurt my feelings. I actually really appreciated his honesty. Like, it helped me to know that he was self-aware enough to be like, oh, well, here's my bias and I'm going to work through it. I just didn't want to have to hide who I was dating from them. And while my first real relationship with another woman did not end well at all, it was just really, really good to finally express myself that way. It had been so long that I had kept that sort of secret, I guess, almost even from myself, that to be open about it just was, it's almost like a weight being lifted off my shoulders. And I'm not currently dating anyone, but I'm glad I had that experience, and I would do it again. Except for now, I'm kind of in this like super hermit type phase where, you know, I'm just like, I got no time to do anything, and so I'm grumpy all the time, and I go to bed at like 9 and basically live like I'm a 90-year-old woman because that's just what I do. But I'm very grateful that I now feel safe enough to be open about my sexuality in a way that I never could before. That takes such a toll, you guys. Trying to hide who you are or just not accept part of who you are because you think it's going to upset other people or you feel shame about it. It's exhausting. It really takes a lot of emotional resources away from, you know, other areas they should be focused on. Did you hear him? Come here. You're so fierce. Let's hear it again. Oh my God, he's not fierce at all. He's just like the littlest mop of a dog. He thinks he's so tough. I love it. So, that's my coming out story, I guess. And it's not super dramatic, and that's okay. It doesn't need to be. It's my story, and so it's important to me. As far as what we're gonna do with this whole thing, I just have things I want to share with you about, you know, maybe feeling like you don't fit in. Let's connect over that, because I know I'm not the only one. I know there are other people who also feel like they don't fit in, and I would maybe venture a guess that most of us feel like we don't fit in somewhere. I think we're all misfits to a degree. The Island of Lost Toys. Is that what it is? That Rudolph thing? Am I thinking of the right thing? Sure. My dog has to show me how brave he was. Now he's scratching himself. That's what that jingling is in the background. So there's that. Did you get them? Oh, good job. Good job. How fun. You get to hear me talk to my dog. That's a very entertaining podcast. All right. Let's talk about geeky things. Because I've got some other things to say in the geeky vein of topics. I have been asked about my fandoms. What was my first fandom? What are my current favorites? Things like that. And I could go on and on and on about that, but I feel like I've already talked your ear off a little bit, so maybe we'll go into more detail throughout the podcast arc. Whew, first fandom. You know, I think it would probably have to be a toss-up between Star Trek and Star Wars, because they were such a huge part of my childhood. I was, oh, how old was I? I spent most of my time, I guess, nerding out with my dad, because my dad is also kind of a super big geek in a lot of ways. So I remember watching Star Trek, like the original Star Trek series, with him. And I also remember going to see Star Wars with him. I'm sure my mom was there, but for some reason, these memories, I just remember my dad. My first crush on anybody was Captain James T. Kirk, as portrayed by a young William Shatner. And interestingly enough, my daughter's first, like, recognizable crush was on Zachary Quinto's Spock. I just think it's kind of awesome that we both were crushing on Star Trek people. I don't know if that says anything about us as a family or if it's genetic, but yeah, so I do consider myself a Trekkie, and I considered myself a Star Trek fan from a very, very young age, but Star Wars was also seamlessly intertwined in all of those childhood memories. I loved Han Solo and Princess Leia so, so much. I am one of those Star Wars nerds that hates the prequels, but I'm one of those few Star Wars nerds that actually really loves the new movies that are coming out. Do not talk trash on Force Awakens, because I will fight you. I don't care. I fucking loved it. And I loved The Last Jedi. And I loved crotchety old grumpy Luke Skywalker, because that makes sense to me, okay? That resonated with me. I don't want to hear any complaints about it at all. Oh, by the way, I studied film and history in college. So when we're discussing film things or history things, yeah, pretty much I get the final word, because I'm the one that paid for studying that particular topic. It's a great way to win arguments, or at least I feel like I win it. I'm like, yeah, well, I was a film major. Boom. Ha. People still mansplain shit to me all the time. It's super fucking annoying. Just happened recently, as a matter of fact. Like, don't fucking talk to me about representation in film. I will tell you about representation in film. Thank you very much. I have a family member that I haven't spoken to in like over a year because he tried to mansplain some political shit to me. Like, I get real fired up, clearly. So don't do it. Don't mansplain to me. I don't want to hear it, and I don't put up with it. Deal? Deal. Okay, back to the fandoms. So yeah, Star Trek, Star Wars, probably my earliest fandoms. What is my current favorite? That's a hard one. Shit. I like all kinds of things. I love Doctor Who. I love comics, particularly Marvel. I don't know. Can you have a fandom over like classic literature? I feel like you should be able to. Super into that. I like some anime. I do have a Naruto themed tattoo on one of my arms. So yeah, I'm a little bit all over the place. One fandom that I am not part of and that I could not get into was Supernatural. Couldn't do it, you guys. Couldn't do it. Everybody told me, oh, it's so great. You're gonna love it. You're gonna love it. You're gonna love it. I got like maybe halfway through the first season and I was so sick of all of the bullshit woman tropes that I was seeing. The ineffectual mother, the monstrous feminine. It just, it was driving me crazy. So I stopped, and I have heard that it gets much better, and I don't know, it probably does, but I don't know if I'll go back to it, because there are so many things to watch. Like, come on. Is Always Sunny in Philadelphia a fandom? Can that be a fandom? Because that's pretty much my favorite series ever of all time in the comedic realm. So good. Oh my god, it's so good. What else do I like? Evil Dead. I like those movies. I like horror to a degree. I don't like the torture porn shit like Hostel. That's going way back, I know. But I don't like Human Centipede. I don't do that stuff. I don't care for it at all. Old school horror, like Hitchcock horror, I love. I'm a sucker for like Lord of the Rings, and The Hobbit, fantasy things. I loved the Game of Thrones books, did not love the TV series. I stopped watching after the second season. And we can argue about that later, but I have my reasons. Westworld. Diggin' Westworld. Just finished season 2 not long ago, and I liked it a lot, so I'm excited to see what they do with season 3. Is Unicorn a fandom? Can that be a fandom? Because I love unicorns. I've loved unicorns since I was a little kid, and I always kind of had to hide that because it was considered super lame, and now all of a sudden, like, everybody loves unicorns? What the fuck is this? Come on, guys. Help me out here. In fact, like all of this nerdy stuff that now is suddenly more mainstream, like really, I got teased for having a picture of Wesley Crusher in my locker in high school. Now I feel like I could totally get away with it and it would be fine. Okay, maybe not because it was Wesley Crusher and... But whatever, fuck you guys. Wesley Crusher was awesome. What other fandoms do I like? I could go on and on and on, really. Superheroes. Let's talk superheroes because I did mention comics. So, I kind of have two favorite superheroes. I grew up loving Spider-Man. Do you ever watch that cartoon Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends? It's like from the 80s, like early 80s. Had Firestar. He was like roommates with Firestar and Iceman. Just kind of weird if you think about it. But anyway, loved that. Love Spider-Man. He's like the hero of my youth and optimism and innocence, I guess. And then I got older and kind of jaded and cynical, and now Daredevil is my favorite because, like, he tries to do all these good things and everything just keeps constantly going to shit. So the Netflix Daredevil series is awesome. Love it. Love Jessica Jones. Love Luke Cage. Hate Iron Fist. I'm sorry, you guys. I cannot stand Danny Rand. Can't stand him. He sucks. Gross. Don't want to watch it. Not going to watch the second season. I forced myself to watch the first season. I feel like he ruined the Defenders. I can't watch the second season. I just don't think I can do it. I don't have it in me. So I don't know. That's like, what's my favorite fandom now? I guess superhero shit is always going to be like one of my things. Yeah, I feel like that counts. I feel like that counts. I like Captain America. I'm on his side for Civil War. Now we know. And that's, I guess, all I've got for you today. I think that's a sufficient introduction. I do have a lot of thoughts about FanX, which is the local comic convention. And they're pretty strong feelings, and I'm pretty fucking pissed at them. But we'll get into that in another episode, because I feel like I've talked your ear off already. So next time, I will hopefully have a guest. And you won't have to listen to just me the whole time, but I wanted to give you a little bit of a background on who I am and where I'm coming from, and hopefully you'll tune in next time because I'm going to be kind of interviewing, or shall we say podcasting, with a lot of people that are here in the Salt Lake area and some people that are, you know, further out, people that I have connections to. We all kind of consider ourselves misfits, and I just want really to have all of us come together. Let's love each other and be awesome to each other, be excellent to each other, as the case may be. You can maybe hear more of my dog barking and trying to protect me from the neighbors entering their apartment, because apparently that's what my dog likes to do. And it'll be fun. Maybe I'll even let my daughter talk sometimes. She's pretty funny to listen to. Be good. It'll be good. So, this is Victory Red, and I'm going to be signing off for this time, and we will talk to you all soon.